Set. Okay. Good morning, everyone. It's Tuesday, January 14th, 2020. It's 9 a.m., and we are assembled for general discussion in the Board of County Commissioners Conference Room. Present are Commissioner Morgan and Commissioner DeYoung. Commissioner Fowler is at training today. So we'll get started with item number one, Community Corrections Quarterly Update. And Nate Galluran, as the director, will join us at the table, and we'll just get a quick overview of his department.
Thank you, Commissioners. It has been a very busy fall, and I've condensed our quarterly report into two pages. Wow. And I do have a couple of other items to discuss that are really, really significant to our agency. So here's a copy of the quarterly report summary. It is front and back. I'll start with the significant agency notes. We ratified the Community Corrections Allotment Plan with your approval and in partnership with the Department of Corrections and LIPSIC's support as well. Second bullet item, we participated in the Data Reporting and Business Intelligence Strategic Initiative for the Department of Corrections, and that's an initiative to replace our CMIS database for the state. We're still plugging along with that, and hopefully we'll get some decisions here in the next few months. We conducted interviews for a data analyst and are hoping to fill that position very soon. We're currently in background with one top candidate who is from out of state. We participated in the Great American Shakeout, which is always fruitful and entertaining, as well as educational. So thank you for the opportunity. We really appreciate that the county makes that a priority. Because eventually the big one's coming and we're going to be ready. So we filled lead positions in treatment, also in custody alternatives programs, administrative services, and in our field services division. We participate.
When you say that, those remain non-union, correct?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. The lead positions are union positions.
Thank you. I misspoke.
Yeah, yeah.
I said the wrong one, but
Yeah. They're still union positions. We participated in IMPACTS, which is a planning meeting session in preparation to apply for future funding through the state, and it's for behavioral health initiatives. I'm sorry, Amanda, I don't think I gave you. P.O. Steve Monroe received national award recognition for his work in the Second Chance Employment Program, winning the American Parole and Probation Association President's Award, which he received on January 3rd. And I want to read an excerpt from the actual award that was presented to him. Officer Steve Monroe has carried out exceptional work for Josephine County, Oregon, through his work on the Second Chance Employment Program, launched in partnership with the District Attorney's Office, the courts, community corrections, and local businesses. The program has yielded over 50% employment rates for medium and high-risk offenders, significantly more than the statewide average. Officer Steve Monroe reached 77% employment rates for his highest-risk population by connecting with his clients and business administrators on a relational level. As an advocate for the Second Chance Employment Program, Officer Monroe provides his dedication to his clientele day after day. He role plays, interviews, personally accompanies clients to interviews for support, and uses his counseling background to help others walk the road to recovery. He's also integrated himself within the Josephine County Jail bed treatment process, where he facilitates a cognitive therapy group each week. This is really important, and I think this is what distinguished Officer Monroe from others, is that Officer Monroe shares a similar role to recovery as much of his clientele. Decades ago, he was formerly homeless, destitute, and addicted to antisocial behavior on the streets of San Francisco, California. Today, Steve is a credentialed parole and probation officer and an alcohol and drug counselor, a U.S. Army veteran, a Ford Scholar, and a Portland State University graduate. His unique story has fueled his drive to help others succeed. And he was among a whole lot of other candidates that were really, really also highly recognized and honored as well. But he won this President's Award by the American Parole and Probation Association, and that was a huge, huge deal for us. So just to tell you the competition that he was up against, the other guy that was, his name's Dr. Robert Gable, actually invented electronic monitoring. And so,
wow.
Yeah, Steve Monroe won this President's Award. So it was a huge deal for Josephine County. And he was honored just a couple of days ago.
The department hasn't always been associated with APPA, so that's kind of new.
Yeah, fairly new.
How's that experience been for you?
It's been really good. There's all kinds of resources out there that APPA has that they're willing to share. And one example is when we go to these different trainings, we bring back these concepts like kiosks, for example, that we're likely going to be implementing soon just for efficiency's sake. Other things like peer mentoring and peer support programs, those kind of concepts are really helpful. But those things are shared nationwide, and it reminds me of the Oregon Knowledge Bank that the Criminal Justice Commission has, where they compile all these different concepts and then share them with the rest of the state. Well, in APPA, it's a national recognition. It's national sharing, if you will, of these different concepts to help evidence-based practices and community corrections as a whole. So anyway, it's been very good for us. Josephine County was awarded $2.2 million from Justice Reinvestment to continue our services with secure treatment, the defendant assessment reports, that's the DAR, outpatient treatment, transitional housing, and other programming. We launched a new curriculum in our treatment division known as the UC Alcohol and Drug Curriculum in order to satisfy elements of the CPC, which is the Corrections Program Checklist. And our next audit is June 2nd. We're anticipating a pass with flying colors on that particular date. We launched a new electronic health record database. Thanks for signing that agreement for us to launch that initiative with Dr. Cloud in order to maximize billing efficiencies and treatment and satisfy elements of the OHA, which is the Oregon Health Authority, for record keeping in our treatment division. We completed an end-of-year goal report for 2019. I happen to have brought a copy of it. It is fairly lengthy. I printed it on both sides so I wouldn't kill any additional trees. But there is a copy for your records on our treatment, on our end-of-year goal report for 2019. In partnership with OACCD, we're requesting additional funding for community corrections for the legislature of approximately $25 million. Every conversation that I've had and have been a part of, including with the executive team of OACCD, it's likely that we will continue to see support for this initiative. If we get an additional $25 million in this current biennium, we will have roughly $877,000. Dollars that will be allocated to Josephine County, which is the 3.51%. And I have a copy of our association's letter with our talking points for you all commissioners to share with the legislatures if you ever get a chance to talk about.
The current OACCD president, Eric Geyer, was at AOC yesterday at the Public Safety Steering Committee.
Okay, good.
And we voted to support essentially, there was an extensive time study done to see how much it costs to supervise somebody, and the legislator did not fund it fully at that cost. So there was a $50 million ask for the biennium, of which they cut it in half. And our messaging, I already spoke with a couple of representatives on Ways and Means yesterday just to kind of follow up with them that where they funded Justice Reinvestment, if they don't fund the base funding for community corrections, they've left the whole system unsupported, mm-hmm. and it wasn't meant to be competitive, that they build upon each other. And so AOC will be, that's something that we're going to be strongly advocating with you.
Thank you. So in that vein, we're hoping to have a building expansion of 15 offices and a conference room. I've met with Ryan with some preliminary discussions on how that will look. And we would use, just anticipating, if it all happens the way we're hoping it will happen, we're anticipating to use that money in conjunction with our carryover from previous biennia to help fund that particular building project.
On site where you're at?
Yeah. And once, just to get y'all up to speed, Ryan is in the process of getting a contract with the architect that will be drawing up the plans, and then we will be presenting those things to you before we move forward, obviously. So, as it relates to our outcome measures for parole and probation services, we are now seeing a continued growth with our population knocking on the door, 1,300 folks. And just to give you context as to where we're at and why we're wanting to build office spaces is because we are busting at the seams. We got pretty much every closet filled with personnel. We just recently had to move our work crew foreman into another office space just to provide some additional room for our last case specialist hirings from the custody alternatives programs, and we're just busting at the seams. We just need more space. So,
and the future doesn't look like it's going to be slackening any, especially like, say, we were talking this morning about we added an extra courtroom and we're looking at more DAs, and we've got a full complement of Grants Pass Public Safety and almost full out of Sheriff's Office. We're going to start putting a lot more people through the system, and mm-hmm. then your the dugout. They go back to you every time with parole and probation.
Yeah.
So if they add more people to your roles, you need more people to attend that.
Yeah, we're seeing that on the front end with probation services. And then on the back end, when we're seeing a trend in early releases with a short-term trans leave out of prison, we just have an influx of people coming to us. And now we're seeing those numbers just continue to skyrocket. We're trying to use earned discharge the best we can, as well as our reduced supervision unit. But at the end of the day, it's still bodies that we got to supervise. So we got to do something with our infrastructure before we hire any more bodies. Significant field service division notes. We hosted the statewide Sex Offender Supervision Network, where PO Mark Waits is the chair of the organization and is spearheading an initiative with the parole board to level our sex offenders throughout the state, and he's doing a good job with that particular organization. We also participated in a career day for Grants Pass High School, which was really beneficial, I think, for the Grants Pass students, and we received some positive feedback for that particular event. And I know the county participated as well. There was other divisions and departments that participated with that. So that was a very good event to be in participation with. Shifting gears to the other side, we are at the treatment services. We are significantly changing some things in treatment, which is starting with our curriculum. We had some findings through the CPC that indicated that we need to do some changes, and so we're making those recommended changes from the state, and our next audit, as mentioned before, is June 2nd. We're working on having two credentialed and certified CPC auditors within our agency to help maintain internal compliance and partnering with the state reviews as well. But selfishly, it's really to make sure that our program is completely bulletproof and that we won't have any surprises in that next auditing. By the way, I'm going to the next CPC school, which is going to be hosted in Jackson next month, and so I'll be certified as well with the CPC, which is the corrections program checklist audit for the state, if I didn't mention that already. We're implementing Dr. Cloud and have weekly implementation meetings with our IT department, administration, and Dr. Cloud Consultants. We started that last week on Thursday. We are continuing to participate in the Alcohol and Drug Policy Commission's effort to develop a statewide strategic plan for prevention, treatment, and recovery resources. The strategic plan is due to the legislature this summer. My term is up in February, which is next month. So I've been asked to be reappointed and making sure that that's okay with you as the board to be reappointed for that the Alcohol and Drug Policy Commission. I just feel like we have a little bit of unfinished business without having the strategic plan completely adopted with the state, and that's going to be due in the summer, although this new appointment is going to be for another 4 years, so, but I'm dedicated.
A conversation about that and just this strategic plan and the significance of prevention, as they implement different prevention strategies, and it's even come up with conversations with AllCare and different agencies, that you're making a difference, so you're investing over here, which means these services maybe don't have the same impact, so then they cut your funding, which now you don't have the money to invest over here to keep it's so trying to find a way to get credit for prevention so you can continue to fund the programs is an interesting thing where they find themselves right now. But prevention is cheaper than the outcome.
Get credit for prevention without risking everything else.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we're not seeing the benefits of prevention at this point. You know, when I say seeing it, we're not seeing it in the outcome measures, because there's a whole lot of people that are addicted to substances, and it's scary. So, including all the overdoses and the rise in fentanyl and opioid use and abuse. And
it's odd, you know, you can't, we were watching television the other day, you can't use a plastic straw, but because it's bad for you, and yet they'll give you needles and drugs and everything you want for that end of it. All free. Boy, don't use that plastic bag.
Right. Let's see. And the last piece is we're recruiting for an A&D counselor. We had a retirement / resignation. One of our A&D counselors ended up going to another state because of her some personal reasons. So we're now recruiting for an A&D counselor position. In our custody alternatives program, what you guys would like to see, I think, is at the bottom line where it says estimated jail dollars saved. I think I'm going to change that language to jail dollars avoided instead of saved. But we have avoided a cost of $187,200 in terms of an estimate, because of all of the custody alternative programs that we have. We hired another case specialist and also hired a lead case specialist, and they are doing fantastic so far. And that concludes my quarterly report.
What is the daily cost of the jail? I know it's $115 for the prison, but I didn't know what the local is.
We estimate it to be about $100, so...
I think that's consistent with what the city was paying per jail bed per day.
Yeah, but they changed. I mean,
sure.
I mean, like, the prison wasn't $115 when we first got into it. It's gone up to that, but it's, so I didn't know if they've adjusted it locally too. And
not that I've been aware of any most recent studies. I don't know that we have any other estimates. If it did come in, I would guess that it would go up just based on personnel costs and inflation and COLAs and, you know, those kind of things.
And the time study they told us yesterday was $14.24 a day of what it costs to supervise somebody. So versus $115 in prison or $100 locally in a bed.
Yeah, we're still the best bang for the buck.
Yeah,
well, there's so much more you have to provide for them when they're incarcerated. Medical, dental, you name it. They get all kinds of stuff over there.
Yeah.
So if they're at home being supervised.
Session starts first week of February, second week of February?
Thanks. Yeah, it's first or second, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so I know that, it's only a 6-week session, so it'll be a quick bang for trying to, I know they're reaching out to see who can go up and testify for the funding and stuff. And like I said, I reached out to a couple of them yesterday just to kind of get the word out, and emergency management stuff is up too with preparedness stuff and some different changes there that are will affect us too. So appreciate your work, Nate.
Yeah, thank you.
That's all I have. Do you have a minute to stick around for two for review of the local public safety coordinating council advisory board minutes? I did not get a chance to read them.
Yeah, I can certainly do that.
So I can't tell you whether I had any questions about them or not.
I was at the meeting, so I remember.
There's a red line. And
oh, no, that's Ivy. I have the Ivy.
Okay, that's Ivy. Oh, excuse me.
They're in there. Okay.
There you go. There's three of them. There's June 13th, October 10th, and August the 8th.
Are you guys, do you guys have Narcan?
Yes.
Have you had to use it yet?
I don't think we have, no.
Do you have a system in place to document that you do?
Yeah, it's part of our policy.
I know that it's something that came up in the EMS board trying to figure out, because Jackson County got hit with all those overdoses, mm-hmm. and but we did not. Mm-hmm. But tracking between the emergency room and the fire EMS folks that are responding, but we wondered how many police, sheriff, and other agencies are using Narcan and those overdoses, and if they're used, are they making it to the hospital? Are they getting documented and follow up? And
we had, and this actually might be in one of the minutes here, Lipsick, but Grants Pass Public Safety keeps those stats for their police, and I can't remember exactly how many were reported, but they do keep those numbers. It's in October.
Better than that rainy slush we had earlier.
But yeah, as part of our policy, anytime we have any need for naloxone to administer it, and we use the nasal ones. We don't use the needle syringe ones, but we're supposed to document those things.
Do you guys still take part in the mental health court with your office?
Mm-hmm.
I just noticed the funding, that it didn't apply because it doesn't have phases, which is kind of curious and contrary to...
You're talking about for the grant that we applied for?
Yeah, for the behavioral health.
Yeah, we're making those modifications actually right now, so hopefully we can apply for that CJC grant and get awarded next time.
My experience with it so far has been interesting because many of the people that go through have ongoing relationship even after the court component.
Mm-hmm.
And the court component is a, well, will I go to jail for this kind of stick, and then without it, it's kind of an interesting progress. But there's, I know Options spends a lot of money and staff time taking part in that. Mm-hmm. But I think it's worth it, especially it might be worth trying to see if there's any connections with the state legislature regarding this, because of the behavioral justice reinvestment that's coming.
Mm-hmm.
And there should be a direct correlation to mental health court and that behavioral health impact and jail diversion.
Mm-hmm.
It's. I think that would maybe be a suggestion on where to follow up with that if there's an opportunity.
Yeah, we are following up just as a system with the impacts. So each one of those meetings, and then we have another meeting scheduled for Thursday just to discuss how that would look if we ended up pursuing and getting awarded that money from behavioral health. And it's, I want to say $10 million is the amount of money that's out there that we can apply for.
CJC said there's a, is that the one that is out right now that is a competitive grant?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, and they just formulated their review committee, I want to say last month. So we know who that is on that committee. But we have to get the application in once the application is, or once they start soliciting applications through the CJC. So do you want me to present on these minutes?
Is I just have a question because I'm interested in the, what's it called, Naloxone. Uh-huh. Is that something new? Is Narcan an injection or is it?
It's not new. It's been around for quite some time. In fact, the Alcohol and Drug Policy Commission in, I want to say, 2017 or 2018 had a resolution to have naloxone available at any site where an AED is located. So it's at least a couple of years old in terms of mainstream use. When it comes to first responders have been using it for quite some time. In our industry, we haven't, as a whole for the state, accepted it as a primary use for POs until just recently. And a lot of it had to do with the Senate Bill 910 that allowed for naloxone to be used. It also removed POs from being the gatekeepers of medication-assisted treatment. So it was just kind of a way to deal with the opioid crisis, if you will, and hopefully reduce the amount of overdose deaths.
It shows here that average life saved per year is 30. Anybody keep track if they go and do it again? Frequent flyers to OD it?
I don't know that they keep track of that. I don't know.
We asked that question at the EMS thing because, you know, I said, are you tracking blah, blah, blah? And they said, well, it may be documented as an overdose, but this is something that we're concerned about if it's being documented correctly.
Mm-hmm.
But we know there are some individuals that have had repeated overdoses. And we know because some of them have now died because they have had two or three saves and then just assumed it doesn't keep them from using.
Mm-hmm.
And but if you notice under the women's subcommittee thing in there, one of the things that public health has partnered with the jail and corrections is trying to make sure that everybody releasing has Oregon Health Authority, they get these backpacks that include something in them. I saw in the notes it said mm-hmm. something about meds. I don't remember which of the three ones it was, but one of them said that they're including it in the backpack, I thought, even.
Yeah, and that's through public health.
Mm-hmm.
They're supplying those backpacks.
But
in
even
partnership with
you can get them at the pharmacy. Any family member can get them. It's not just law enforcement. They can have these services. These ones specifically are funded through.
Are they prescribed? Is it a prescription to get one? They just go buy one.
State law has made it available, so they essentially don't want people dying of overdose, and they want any family member to be able to have it, any person to be able to have it. Some people have used that as a free get out of jail card in the sense that I don't have to be careful of using because right. someone will be there to save me.
Well, I'll just go back to the old days when, you know, you used to see people drink until they pass out. That was their objective, to get as drunk as they can and they don't know when to stop. Their objective was to pass out. And with addicts, is that, you know, I want to go as brush as close to death as possible. And then you bring me back, and I go, wow, that was really cool. I think I'll go try that again.
Mm-hmm. I haven't ever heard that stated in this circumstance.
Huh.
It's more a checkout of where you presently are, and I don't think.
Addiction's just a really complicated issue, mm-hmm. and the way we look at it is we can't do anything with treatment to get them cured if they're dead. So if we can somehow keep them alive where we have a chance to get them to change the way they think, in terms of addiction and keep them somewhat whole so we can get them stabilized and being back to productive members of society. That's what our aim is. You know, does naloxone work in terms of long term? Only if it's used with treatment, cognitive behavioral therapy, and we get these folks to change. But we can't get them to change if they're dead.
And quite frankly, I've never seen a substance have more impact on someone's brain. And the meth rewires you, and you have a process. And they say that it takes time that you can kind of repair some of that stuff. But heroin, I saw people go 2 years in prison without it, and they get out, and it's the first thing they want to do. It was their ever-prevailing thought. And the fear of, I'd have people say that the fear of coming down off of it was enough that they'd use, and then they'd have to use sooner and sooner, and it was just this constant thing of, I don't want to get sick. I don't want to get sick. They don't want to face the coming down symptoms, and it literally overtakes...
You would think it'd have just the opposite, that I'd never want to go there again.
Mm-hmm. But it's like you're not dealing with the person. You're dealing with the drug that's got a control of their brain. And the knowledge of, if you can get them past that point that the substance isn't controlling their brain and you get back to the person, there's hope that they can go on from there. But it's younger and younger, and a lot of it is people get introduced with pills and prescriptions. And there was a guy that came and spoke here at the Ann Basker that talked about the impact of Sunday or evening meals with your family and being intentional to not have your meds in there for the teenagers to grab. And but it seems that it's younger and younger mm-hmm. that people are getting exposed to it. But I don't think it's a, oh, I want to check. I think some of them can't think of anything else. All right, so I only noticed one... I pointed out one typo to Annette. She'll get fixed. And otherwise, I think everything looks good.
Okay. Do we need a motion to approve these minutes?
I don't think so. I think it's just if you have any questions that we've had a chance to go over them.
Okay.
Yeah. So we just get to sign them.
Okay.
Thanks, we'll Nate. It's kind of nice to have someone to process them with.
Yeah.
Anytime.
And actually, as always, our personnel policy... about advisory, it is the staff that is supposed to come present to us on those. It's not just the commissioner that's supposed to report. And so it might, and the updates from the committees and stuff like that, if you go to the personnel policy of that staff liaison is kind of that liaison to bring it back to the board. So
I can remind Lipsit of that point at our next meeting.
Well, I didn't even know it until...
Because I'm not part of staff now.
Yeah. Isn't it nice?
For now, yes.
Don't worry, you'll have your turn soon.
Right.
He just got rid of the chair position.
Okay, thank you very much, Commissioner.
Have a good day, Nate.
You too. Thank you.
Moving on to item number 3, order number 2020-003, excuse me. In the matter of the Illinois Valley Airport Advisory Board amendment to the bylaws. We have those that need a paper form. I believe we have them in paper form and page 30 of your packet. Page 30 of your computer.
Thank you. Did these get compared to the main personnel policy? There's a personnel policy about advisory boards and... just didn't know if that got compared to these. That it's not in conflict with the overarching county policy about advisory boards. No. Okay.
And I think in the Illinois Valley Advisory Board they had some corrections that are... They wanted to put in their vision statement in place of Article 3, purpose and goals. They want to put their vision statement in there. I think that's the only difference in mm-hmm. between the two. That's right. Our purpose there was to try to get the two advisory board bylaws to be consistent with one another. Mm-hmm. And I think they, you know, out in Illinois Valley, they want to meet once a quarter, but in here they want to meet once every other month. So we said at least once a quarter. So that covers both of them and any changes that they'd want to make in the future. If they ever decide to go back to once a month, they can do that because it is more than the requirement of once a quarter. That was one of the big changes. So, but I think they both hacked it over. They tried to get them exactly the same, but Illinois Valley was very, very adamant with their vision statement being put in because they have a lot of time invested in that vision statement on the first go-around years and years ago. So, and we'd like to get this put into motion ASAP because I think we've got a couple of openings that we would like them to be brought on with the new bylaws in order in place before we put them on the board. So,
I think for all bylaws, I'd like to know how they relate to the county's policy, okay, just to make sure that everything is in line that way.
Okay. How long do you want to look at that?
That is a good question. I think I could probably do it
like
before Thursday.
At 10?
I could probably do it at 10. That's probably the only time in my schedule this week.
Honestly. Like about now. 10 o'clock?
Yeah. I'd be happy to do that. Are you wanting them to make the recommendations of their extra fellow members before it comes to the board?
No, they went through this as to how many they felt they could do. They have a tough time. Both boards have a tough time getting a quorum. And part of the things is that they meet too often. And then also the recommendation, the board should be comprised of 7 members, mm-hmm, instead of 5. And I think, and then you would have a quorum of 4 out of 7 rather than 3 out of 5. And I think they felt that was easier to accomplish.
I appreciate the work. Took
out the secretary on Article 8.
Uh-huh.
Took out the secretary because that was getting to be pretty tough trying to find somebody to keep the minutes, and the secretary really had to be there every minute.
They're one of the only advisory boards that has that role.
Secretary?
Correct. Staff does it on all the other
ones. They've set themselves up to record and to make sure that everybody mentioned their name before they spoke. Mm-hmm. And then Trish will take those recordings and actually type up the minutes.
That would be good because it's hard to know who's... Yeah, it'd be hard, though, to say who is...
I just put county staff because that covers...
Yeah, it's
pretty tough. So we're making some changes. Andreas Black, chairman out at Grants Pass, he actually has name tags lined up for the members, so that everybody knows who's out. He did that on his own. Did you do that for him?
He did it. Wonderful.
Huh?
He did it.
He did it? Yeah. Well, he's pretty special. So that worked out good, and I would highly suggest, and I'll tell Larry, they should do that out in the IV also. Once you get the board established, have each one have a paper thing.
I think a review of all the advisory boards, and Trish has tried to really get versed in all of them since she's been here. She's taken that project on, and but just even a consistency of, do they have advisory, do they have bylaws, do they need bylaws, is it an order, is it an ORS, what is the document that creates the group, what's the overarching thing, and are they consistent, and is county policy consistent? And I think it's a good opportunity for us to look at all of them. As we've been talking about the liaison roles and advisory roles, this is a good time to kind of get a consistency. And this makes sense as far as the secretary and the staff support, because every other advisory board, the staff prepares the agendas, the staff does the minutes. Mm-hmm. And so just trying to make sure, I understand, though, with a staff of 3 in the airports, that's a tight group compared to the other. But I would like to look over him if possible.
Sure.
And I will get him back.
If you could do that ASAP, because we'd like
I would
to get
be
people
happy
on board. Just as soon as possible. We have some people in waiting that have been waiting since.
Does this keep membership from being appointed?
We would like this to be adopted before the new members come on board.
Okay.
It does.
Okay, I will...
If you have an opportunity to look at those, that would be swell.
Off the top of my head, I recommend we take out this line. This should be recommended by the advisory board. That can slow up a process, especially if they don't have a quorum. It's not consistent with what the other committees are doing. Some do, but some don't, and it's at our overall response anyhow. So, just on the first page. I'm on IV.
I got Josephine County and I
at the IV one. There you go.
Okay,
so just that's the. Let me look at the Grants Pass one.
So you want to take out to be recommended by the advisory board?
Correct. 5 to 7 more members appointed by the commissioners who will serve at the pleasure of the court. So
who's saddled with recommending them? I mean, they make application to the board, to the advisory board first. They look it over and then they recommend to the commissioners.
That's not consistent. We don't have a consistent process with all the advisors. I think this is why we as a board need to talk about advisory boards.
I kind of like it this way here, because the advisory board really needs to screen who they think they can work with.
Not necessarily.
But
it can also screen people out that should be there.
To stack the deck.
Correct. I know that on some, it's yes, the chair, yes, the staff. Do you know anything about this person? Do you have individuals? But it's really us that make that decision. And there are things that can get in the way of it moving forward if they don't have a quorum, if there's personality differences, and it might be that you want to change things up. So it does nothing precludes us from asking for recommendations, but to require it, I would say, could be hold up the process down the way. And I would recommend that not be in there. And it's not something that's consistent with other advisory boards.
Okay, can you put down who, instead of shall be recommended, can be recommended by the advisory board so that they still have a skin in the game if they wish to?
We can do that. Instead of the shall, change it
shall
to may.
Can. So, if you get a the advisory board says, no, we really like this guy, they should have some say in it. I think that's what they were after is if they get a really good person that they know is going to serve the board well and can work with the board, that they're heard at the commissioner level. Okay.
All right, and I will. I just want to check it to the policy, the county policy.
Okay. All right, we can do that.
And
Commissioner Morgan will look at, and we've got. In fact, we can lump 3 and 4 together because they're both actually the same.
Yeah.
So I'll read number 4, order number 2020-004, in matter of the Grants Pass Airport Advisory Board amendment to the bylaws. Very similar to IV, so Commissioner Morgan wishes to look at 3 and 4 following this meeting and get back to us if there's any changes that she sees.
I am also going to disagree with them taking out the purpose and the goals. That's us defining their purpose and goals. If they want to come up with a vision statement, that is added to, but it doesn't get to replace the purpose of the advisory board in the first place and the goals. Let's see.
Isn't the purpose in the order?
Basically, everything that was in the purpose and the goals was also in the mission statement, so it was redundant. That's why they don't like that.
Okay. I want to look over it.
Okay.
So
going back to it, Commissioner Morgan will look over to it, over these two documents.
And I'll get it back to staff at ASAP.
And get back to the staff sometime today? Can we?
I will try.
Okay, she'll make an attempt to get that done today so we can get this moving forward as we have people waiting in the wings, okay?
Yes, sir.
Item 5, liaison reports. Commissioner Morgan, do you have anything to report?
Last week, let me go to my calendar because it seems like a weekend you forget so quickly. Last week I had several meetings. We had the Rural Fire District meeting. They had asked about doing a RFI before an RFP, and I suggested that's going to, by the time they get what the RFI needs to have and they release it and they get responses and then they have to do an RFP, it's just going to drag it out longer. And I reiterated, no, we've asked that you guys do an RFP with an independent consultant to look at all options and kind of just, but I also have given it to legal. There were some questions that came from one of the subcommittees that I gave to legal, and I haven't got back. So we're going to try to get that to them as soon as possible. We had the EMS board. I've also reached out to AllCare. They have a government affairs vice president, and just looking for some help. Our ASA plan got rejected by the state in ways that, okay, we got pushback for months because we were trying to change some wording in the ASA plan. We finally got it approved through us and sent off. The state criticized it to the point that the only thing they complimented was saying we have a nice table of content.
Do they even know what they're looking at?
And the things we changed, they didn't comment on. The things we left unchanged that were in the last ASA plan, in the last ASA plan, they criticized. Including that we have, and this is why it just doesn't make sense. I've even asked that they submit it as is back and see if they're going to get the same response. Because what AllCare experienced, so in the last year, Oregon Health Plan said that primary health didn't meet muster and they put a private business out of business. And AllCare got a one-year extension and all this stuff. They said, you didn't answer. We need all this, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And then they came back after AllCare resubmitted and they said, oh, all that information we asked you for was in your original application. Here's a five-year extension. Feels the same as what's going on with our ASA plan. For instance, there's a section that describes, ASA stands for Ambulance Service Area. We have two areas in Josephine County. ASA 1 is the Illinois Valley. ASA 2 is Grants Pass. And it has to do with how the contracts went down originally in ambulance service in the history of the county. The Valley was the first to come up with one. So that's why they're ASA 1. They are defined. They have the same response requirements for times and responses, except for they're distinguished by geographic location. One's the Valley, one's the rest of the county. They're defined in the plan as that, and the ASA instructions say that you can define a plan by geography and blah, 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 blah. Their response to us is, we can't see the difference between your two plans. Why do you need two ASAs if they're the same response in the same company? And just because this time the same...
Because we have Hayes Hill in between, and Hayes Hill gets packed with snow, we can't get to them.
Well, it's just one of those things that Douglas County has five ASAs. We have two. I mean, it just doesn't make sense. And it's so this was quite a discussion at our meeting on Wednesday, and also trying to figure out a way of the reporting for AMR and just what information do we need. But we are waiting on that ASA plan to get approved because we need to update the ordinance. We have positions that are formatted in an ordinance in the ASA plan that we can't fill and we need to change and we can't until the state. So we also are kind of being held up with membership. But anyhow, that's it. So the AMPAC meeting, I took the intern to the AMPAC meeting and it was interesting. AMPAC is only its second meeting of combining Board of Health, Public Health, Mental Health Advisory Board, Public Health Board, and the LADPC. And they started with this meeting with doing overviews for the group of here's what the prevention treatment's going on in our county, how it works, here's how mental health works in our county. And we had just got to Michael, but public health is so extensive with like five different divisions that he got through one and we'll take it up the next time. The feedback I got from members afterwards is this is so good. This is the right thing. We should have done this a long time ago. And so that was good feedback. The intern appreciated the information as well. And then Thursday we had the animal shelter advisory as well. So I had AMPAC and then the animal shelter advisory. And those are three meetings in 1 week that are all public health related. Isn't that fun?
First of the year.
first of the month. Yeah. So animal shelter advisory, they're trying to do a couple things. We have a couple projects in the works. We're trying to get the building plan, the permitting process updated for shelters and kennels, and there's a farrier license. So you have a dog license, a farrier license, and a kennel license. But there's a process through public health, and there's a process through animal control, and there's a process through building safety and planning. And we're trying to get those all aligned and agreed upon. So that's something that's going to be coming back to us. In addition, there's the ordinance over dog animal stuff that has been needing updated. They were working on it before we were even here. And so that's continuing. And they also were asked by the city of Grants Pass to come up with recommendations for a cat ordinance for the city. And so the subcommittee reported on that. We gave options to Sergeant Burke that attended, and so that's going on with that. So then on Friday, as District 4 Chair, I'm on the Executive Director search team for AOC. We made the recommendation at background check to move forward with the candidate, so they're negotiating benefit salary and hoping to have that person start in March. In the meantime, Rob Bovette will be the interim director. And Mackenzie stepped up, so that was Friday that we did that. And then yesterday was AOC Day and governance. There's 6 hemp bills. We went over, and every one of the steering committees, they affirmed, the steering committees approved principles and a work plan for this legislative session, and then they went to the legislative committee at 12:30 to be affirmed or not, if that's the whole group. I attended governance and public safety before the legislative and the board. And the hemp ones, my concern is, the feedback I'm hearing locally is that by having 3 different agencies with different standards, you have people bypassing. And Rob Bovette presented on how the feds, as you are aware, are very aware of the leakage out of the hemp market now, because a lot of the black market has moved to hemp because it's going unregulated. But the concerns over water rights, the concerns over different requirements for different things.
So it's odd that the hemp, the marijuana people, the cannabis, the marijuana people have the same concerns about the hemp industry that the local neighborhood had about them coming into their neighborhood. The exact same complaints.
Yes.
The water, what are they going to do? Why they're using all the water? Why they're this and why this? People coming and going all hours of the night. Dog barking and guns going off.
So they are asking that any complaints that we're getting about anything, that it's urgent to get those complaints to the state legislators, because the state legislators need to feel the pressure to get the fixes fixed.
Okay, is there any conversation limiting the ability of a county to put in a business license, as you have championed so for so long, to any cannabis type thing? You know, just say, okay, we're going to have a flat business license, so much per acre. Hemp is what, right now, their licensing is $1,500 per site. Well, you've got some hemp grows out there in Jackson County over by Rouge and whatnot that are huge, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of acres, but that's one site, so therefore it's only $1,500 with Farm Bureau to register a hemp site. They don't do anything, they don't follow through on it, nothing happens. But is there anything restricting us? Because I would like to see us, in fact, I have talking to a marijuana grower, a recreational marijuana grower, and they said, we're all for, you know, they would kick back against any taxation fees or anything business license involved with their industry, because it put them in an unfair in the marketplace. But they said, if you include hemp in with it at so much per acre, we're in all the way. So this may be an opportunity until the state legislature says, no, we can't touch hemp because it's farming. And I had a conversation up at AOC at the conference with the Farm Bureau, and I said, do you understand that you are taking on, because of the right to farm, you're devaluing people's property right next door and all around. Your farms are surrounding a regular person that just wanted to move there and have a couple of horses, and now they're completely surrounded by hemp because it's a right to farm, but it's very intrusive and very objectionable. But they always said, well, we can't do it to this, and we tried the Southern Oregon thing. in retrospect, I probably should have taken the marijuana,
yeah,
Southern Oregon marijuana thing, I should have taken it statewide, because I have since had calls from Deschutes County going, help me here, DeYoung. Show me your plan again, and when do we start? Because I think if it would have gone statewide, we would be funding public safety right now. We would be law enforcement. But no, we got stopped at the state level because of lobbying. But I don't know, this may be an opportunity to say, if they don't write something in there against it, is this something we can do?
The biggest thing that we're focusing on this session, that they do not know if anything will get through or the appetite for.
No, and this may not be the session to send it through, but I mean, in looking at 2021.
So one of the things they're looking at is allowing local control over cannabis as a whole, so that hemp isn't excluded from. So if there is local regulation, that can be all of them. They're looking at one commission to look over all of them, so it's not three different things.
Mm-hmm.
They're looking at fixing the issues with the water rights and all that other kind of stuff. But I can try to get you the bills if you'd like to see what they are looking at right now.
I'll read them. I don't know if I understand them, but at least I'll be able to look and
so the thing about the short session is that each legislator is limited to, Senate is limited to one, and the House is
one and
two,
and the governor has five or something. I don't know.
Committees can have more, so it's a matter of they're trying to shop of where they can get them. But the feedback from Rob was, don't know if there's any appetite in the 6 week session to get anything done.
No,
but they're
trying
to get fixes,
yeah,
and they keep moving forward with that same thing. So, and then public safety, the big one was the Community Corrections funding. There's a request of moving the Office of Emergency Management out of the Oregon Military Department and under its kind of own branch, and moving state fire marshals out of state police. And so they wanted feedback from that. So I was in communication with, I actually went to one of the hearings and had a chat with the director of the Office of Emergency Management afterwards, because I had brought up to the chair of the committee that the feeling is that OEM doesn't come south of Eugene, that they messed up the Spire grant greatly when they didn't look at the regional application we did with Josephine Jackson County, and they viewed it as one agency. And so in all of Southern Oregon, we got one generator when everything was distributed everywhere else. And so I had a chance to have a conversation with him and the chair of the committee about those concerns, and there's another Spire grant coming. And then I also was in touch with the state fire marshal's office about the impacts of these changes. So I'm trying to think if there was another one. There was a request for ambulance stuff that they, ambulance reimbursement through a federal program. I was concerned about if there's, taking part in this program will increase federal regulations and licensing locally. I was able to ask the vote to be put off, and I got a hold of Dave Matthews locally just to get some feedback from him. And he said, we're already under the federal regulations. It doesn't change anything with that. And so he gave me the feedback, and the group went ahead and supported that one. So at this point, it's a matter of seeing what the legislature will do. The big question about cap and trade came up, and there's been so many changes to it that both sides are not not happy at this point. So don't know what will happen. And everything's just legislative concepts, so the bills that are coming are still pending. So it'll be a whirlwind 6 weeks, I think, when it gets here.
Okay.
Those are, looking at my calendar, that was last week and yesterday.
The only, are you done?
Yes, I should let you know that I am going to a collaborative forest restoration project presentation Thursday. And Jackson County also did a letter like we did, a tentative one. And so they want to make sure that we're keeping in touch. And I reiterated with Colleen Roberts, Commissioner Roberts, that we're not going to join the collaboratives. We don't want to lose our coordination status, but we want to be at the table to make sure that our interests are protected and she's in agreement. And so they want to make sure that we're communicating that. So I was going to try to get that letter sent over to them. They sent us their letter so we can see their stance on it. So it looks like they're going forward. They're looking for funding at the federal level. There's an $80 million grant that It's a one-to-one match with local projects. So the $40 million, they think, is eligible. And then they would do harvest and private stuff for the match. And so they're asking for support and the funding for that. Okay, so I'll stop talking now.
Okay. I was at Grants Pass Airport Board meeting last time, and this is mostly what we talked about. We also talked about, Larry gave an update on how we're working on the 1,500-foot runway. He also had a TV interview the other day that I think went really well. I didn't get an opportunity to see it. But it sounds like to me like that we've got all four legislators on board trying to pressure Seattle, the FAA in Seattle, to rethink this thing, try to get us at 1,500 feet. So I'm hoping that pans out. They've got an awful lot of work in it. The present proposal doesn't make any sense at all, and I think just even a layperson looking at it can see that it's not money well spent for what you get. What do you call that? Best use or whatever you call it.
Best bang for your buck.
What is it?
Best bang for your buck.
Yeah.
Highest
yeah.
best use. Yeah.
Yeah. Highest
all that.
And best.
We'll find some
we'll
statement
we'll
for
get
you.
We're
going
to
get you. It's not. It's not the best cost for what you get when.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense that they're charging that much for
right,
that short
exactly.
of a runway extension.
You know, there is an opportunity. That's one of the questions I asked Larry. Is there an opportunity for public-private partnerships if, for instance, they say, we're only going to do 400 feet and we're not going to do the rest. We're going to do another 600 feet in 10 years. You know, if we were to say, okay, it's $5 million for the first 400 feet and $5 million for the next 1,100 feet, is there an opportunity to go into public-private partnership to get, if we had a commitment to, say, the other $5 million from private source, could we just continue on out? While we've got the graders on the ground and all the engineering's done and everything else, could we just carry it on out and we foot the bill, you know, through donations or whatever, foot the bill to get that rest of that runway done? And he seemed to think, yes, there was. So that's just another alternative if it doesn't work out. I think we've got as good a shot as any at turning around the FAA. I can't help but think it isn't something on a personal level up there, because it really doesn't make any sense, you know, when you talk to FAA people. But anyway.
I'm going to put that on my DC list.
Yeah, do that. Make sure that's always on there, just kind of like our third lane type of deal. I was supposed to go to Rogue Valley Area Commission on Transportation this morning, but I can't because I'm here. Those two always knock heads. I did talk to Rob Brandis yesterday to make sure there wasn't anything on the agenda that was too earth-rattling. We have our Josephine County Citizen-at-Large is going to be, and I can't remember his name now, it escapes me. But he used to be in aviation, air traffic control type, that type of a thing. And he's going to be our liaison from here. Larry Ford resigned his official resignation because of his health and whatnot, so this will replace Mr. Ford. Also, I noticed on the agenda that the topic of the third bridge across the Columbia is starting to come up again. And so that's just probably a shot across our bow to let us know why they would even talk down here in Southern Oregon about the third bridge across the Columbia.
Because they won't give us any money.
Bingo, because that's going to suck up the entire funding, keeping ODOT busy on that bridge up there. There'll be every ODOT person in Oregon will have some sort of a role in shaking gravel out to make sure it's the right consistency to go around the rebar. So that's going to take up probably for quite some time. I don't know what the length of that would be. Washington, of course, has fought that for years, because, you know, Portland makes a tremendous amount of money off of Washington. Washingtonians going across the river to do that. So it's kind of cutting off their nose to spite their face. We're working on the siding. We're trying to figure out the siding out there for the fairgrounds. I'm meeting with Courts. They've got a concern about the alarm system in this building. She's met with Swanja's met with
with Ryan Johnson. We were setting up another meeting to kind of get kind of an op. Ryan was going to go back and figure out what everything else and with IT and so on and so forth, because they're really, we have panic, but it seems almost...
Let's not talk about that in a public meeting.
Okay.
But I would recommend that we get a meeting with all three commissioners and the courts and the facilities folks.
Facilities and IT executive
session of the right people, and we need to come up with a plan, so...
Right, and I think the timing is right for that with the Department of Public Safety moving out and the repurposing of the building, so I think you're right with, because Darren Fowler's in on the repurposing end of it, so we'll do that. And let's see, what else? There was one other meeting I was supposed to be to this morning, but didn't get there. Oh, Tamara's meeting by phone with the legislatures on the fairgrounds funding, because they want to cut that out. That's right now. We get about $55,000 a year from the Oregon Fair Association or whatever it is through the legislature. And Todd Nash, of course, had a big campaign last year to try it again. I don't know how far that got. I don't know if that died in committee or what it did. But they were going to have a meeting on it this morning, and Tamara came in, and her and I were going to be on it, but it was conflicting here, so she stayed, and I haven't heard back from her.
When I looked at minutes and journals or whatever they are, the daily reports of our office from 20 years ago, it was not uncommon that commissioners would be at alternate meetings. So this meeting's going on, and this commissioner would be over at that one. It affirmed that everyone can't be all in one place at once.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would just say that if there are those other ones, it almost seems like all the alternate meetings need to be on the master calendar that we can try to accommodate.
Well,
two of us get this one while one get the other, or do we bypass this meeting and put it off, you know, do we put Nate on Thursday instead? And
well, this one we didn't want to bypass because of the minute or the
bylaws.
Because
we want to get it going.
I'm just saying,
if you had to do RB Act, because that's important.
RB Act, I looked at that, and looking at the main conversation was going to be the third bridge in Portland. I didn't feel as though my 2 cents worth. They're not going to upset any apple carts there, and I'm okay with.
I forgot one other meeting last week, a fourth public health one. There's a regional meeting between Jackson and Josephine County. And in that meeting, I talked to Michael Caballero from RV Cog about the county working with their grant writer to supplement our grant stuff. So instead of us looking at hiring additional staff, that we would maybe utilize theirs. And so we're going to set up a meeting with Weber, our grant writer, myself, and Michael Caballero, and just talk about that. And that was a recommendation that came from Colleen at SoReady, that we can maybe utilize them. So thought I'd give you a heads up on that.
Okay. And I saw a blurb that Jackson County is still not interested in going to the next meeting about the fish hatchery.
I haven't seen that yet.
I think it was something on that. I was just reading my emails.
Okay.
I emailed Tammy last week asking if they thought February would be reasonable to reschedule, and she has not responded.
Okay. Well, we'll get that figured out. Okay. Any other thing from liaison reports? I don't have anything. If not, from Commissioner Morgan, we'll move on to item number 6.
One other request came in from All Care yesterday that apparently they would do a meeting with Curry, Josephine, and Jackson County, a commissioner, every month. And at some point, those meetings stopped, and they'd like them to keep going.
Hmm.
And so I said I'd be happy to work that back in.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
Go ahead, sir.
Item number 6, additional subject and matters from commissioners. I have none today. Commissioner Morgan, do you have anything?
I think our liaison reports covered it all. I'm still working on the details of the DC stuff. I spoke with some of the Eastern Oregon commissioners yesterday. I requested AOC do a pre-conference before everybody goes so we can make sure that we're coordinating and getting the most out of it. But I've got requests into Wyden's and Merkley's offices and DeFazio's office, BLM and U.S. Forest Service for meetings. And there's a change in the Were you here when I brought up that I had invited a miner to go with to try to help tell a story?
That was a good idea. Yes, I was here. Yeah.
And so I got an email back that they're recommending two other people go from the mining community. And so I've got to follow up with that today. But there was a health issue that precluded the first one going. So I'm still trying to work out those details of the meetings and get that all going and make sure to coordinate with the Eastern Oregon folks who team. I also put out an invite to the other counties that have mining to see if they would be interested in kind of forming an informal coalition of mining counties. Mm-hmm. And the feedback I've gotten back so far has been positive. So.
Okay. All right. Seeing nothing further on the agenda, and we are going to close this meeting at 10:10 a.m. Thank you.
I don't know how you do that. You can shut that.